The Whaley House, located in San Diego, California, is widely regarded as one of the most haunted houses in the United States. It was built in 1857 by Thomas Whaley and served not only as a family residence, but also a general store, theater, and even San Diego's first courthouse. Tragically, the house has a history of sorrow and death. It is said that the Whaley family experienced several tragedies within its walls, including the suicide of Violet Whaley and the execution of Yankee Jim Robinson on the property before it was built. Over the years, numerous reports of paranormal activity have been documented. Visitors claim to have experienced ghostly sightings, unexplainable sounds, and other eerie phenomena. The Whaley House has become a popular destination for ghost hunters, paranormal enthusiasts, and curious tourists. Join the Swap crew as they bring on a special guest who tells her in-depth story of her visit to the Whaley House on more than one occasion. Nick also gives his in-depth history of the Whaley House so people listening can understand why this is considered one of the most haunted houses in the United States. This episode of the Say What Again Billy podcast begins now. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Say What Again Billy podcast. Very special episode today. We got a crew here for this episode. Joey is in the background. He's doing some work.
Joey, hey guys.
Joey's in the background. He's with us this episode. He's just taking care of a lot of work today. So he'll jump on for a little bit if he could, but he's doing a lot of side work. Nick is being the co-host full duty today.
How you doing, Billy?
Nick, welcome back. And we have a special guest here today that's going to share the episode with us. Ashley, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So we're going to start off with this. Just tell us a little bit about your paranormal love. You told me off air that you have some love for the paranormal.
I do.
And you love this stuff.
I do.
So why don't you start where this love came in, and we'll go from there.
Fun fact about me is, as a kid, my parents put on professional grade haunted houses. Mm. So I actually grew up being involved in that since, you know, itty bitty teeny tiny. I have a deep love for scary clowns. I don't know if that's like a red flag or a green flag, but so I've always been very into scary movies and kind of all of that. As I've gotten older, I definitely have been exploring more of the paranormal. Like, I love all the silly ghost shows. I love going and visiting haunted places. I just got back from the UK, and it was a point for us to make sure we visited some spooky places along the way. So yeah, I love this stuff.
That's awesome. And in the UK, if you care to tell us, which haunted sites did you see out in the UK?
So we visited York in England, and we had dinner at the Golden Fleece, which is supposed to be one of the most haunted
bars.
So they all claim.
Is it like a bar?
It's a bar. It's a bar with a hotel mm-hmm. above it. The most haunted. And it was cool. You know, it's also close to Halloween, so everything's pretty decorated.
Yeah.
But they've got cool pictures and, you know, little painting on the wall explaining kind of what is going on there. I didn't experience anything there, but they had great fish and chips. We went to Mary King's Close in Scotland, which is an underground town, essentially. And they talk about the plague that went through there. They have all kinds of cool artifacts. And there is specifically a room where there is supposed to be this little girl who a medium, I believe they said in the 90s, came through and found this little girl, and she told her she had lost her doll and that her parents had left her there because she had the plague. And so now there's this sort of shrine where all of these dolls are sort of stacked and gathered there. And they always say, you know, people experience things in this room. So as we're walking out, I will say there were a couple women in our tour who, oh, did you feel I had goosebumps coming out of there? And it's like, okay, yeah, you're gonna have goosebumps. It's a bunch of dolls staring at you.
So this other location that you were in had a bunch of dolls, right?
Yeah, sure
can,
did.
Can you name that again? Because I know Joey really, really really wants to go to that one.
It was like, I'm not even kidding, it was a giant pile of people bringing dolls for this little girl. And they said that's not all of her dolls either. They actually have like a storage room to house her dolls because that's people crazy. Just keep bringing them.
I got to get past this fear of flying so that I can go to these places because England, Japan, Italy, and Egypt is on my to-do list.
Egypt has been on my to-do list. I was like the nerd when you start learning about Egyptian history in the sixth grade. And I, for my birthday, went to a museum that had an Egyptian exhibit that came through. And I got a necklace that had my name in hieroglyphs. And I had like a ruler with the alphabet and would try and write my friend's notes. So, yeah, if you guys go to Egypt, I would be very
interested. Now, with everything going on, it's a no-no.
That's a no-no zone, yes.
But at some point in time when the world gets sane again, that's definitely on my to-do list. So, Japan is sick, I heard. And there's a lot of like spirit stuff there as well, but mainly historical. I love Japan. It was brought to my attention through my co-host Joey over there that, and for everyone to know, we have two co-hosts pretty much now. It's Nick has joined the full time, just in case you guys haven't checked the website, just head over to swabpodcast.com, check out the bio for everybody. But Joey brought to my attention that you went to someplace haunted. And if you guys are hearing that in the background, we have three kittens in the studio right now that we are keeping here until we get a home for them. So they're bugging out right now. So when I say we have a full crew here today, it's literally a full crew. But anyways, kittens. Joey brought to my attention that you went to like one of the most haunted places in, people say the United States. It's one of the most haunted houses in the United States. Now there's a lot of places that are haunted, so I don't really buy into that. It's legitimately like
the everyone haunted. Everyone says they're the most haunted.
But
this places.
Is yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you went to the Whaley House.
I did.
In San Diego.
Yes.
So we're gonna start with your experience, and then we're gonna give everyone another session of Nick's notes, which I'm gonna formally do tonight. But tell everybody your experience in the Whaley House.
So I have been to the Whaley House a few times. Mm-hmm. The first time I was doing a little staycation with one of my best friends, and we thought, oh, we'll just go down, hang out somewhere by the beach. It'll be nice and relaxing. I love San Diego, and I'd never really explored Old Town San Diego. And they have this old graveyard. They've got this sort of old village. They have all different kinds of things that you can walk around and explore while you're in that neighborhood. And one of the things that we walked past was the Whaley House. And I had never heard of it. I didn't know what it was. And then on the side, it says, you know, the haunted house or museum or what have you. And of course, I'm immediately like, oh, wait, maybe I have to go inside. And so I know since I went the first time, it's passed hands of ownership. But the first time I went in, how it worked is you bought tickets and you just went in. It was a self-guided tour. They had a little pamphlet you could get, but you really were just sort of left to wander around and explore on your own.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
I feel like any place that is haunted should let people do that. I love that. Like Eastern State Penitentiary I'm mad at it because every Halloween season, It's a legit haunted place.
Right.
But if you go there, they have people jumping and doing jump scares. And I that takes away from people like me that just want to go there.
Yes, I just want to be immersed in this environment. I don't need someone jumping out at me. I will do that somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we walked in. And every time I've been, I will say it's not super crowded. You really get to walk around and you're not feeling overwhelmed by the amount of people are in there. So you really get to explore on your own. And I walked in the front doors and immediately I felt like I couldn't breathe. And of course I'm like, okay, calm down. Like you're psyching yourself out. You are walking into a haunted building, right? Like take a moment. You're faking yourself out, right? So I don't say anything. We keep walking in and I just keep like rubbing my chest because I just feel like there's like a weight. Like it feels like someone is like sitting on my chest. And so I was like, okay, let's just keep walking through because maybe I'm just being silly or maybe I have asthma. Like, you know, maybe there's dust in here. And we keep walking through and my friend finally says, like, are you okay? And I'm like, what? She's you just like keep like holding your chest. Like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, no, I think I'm okay. Like I just can't breathe. And then we are walking down. When you walk in the main hallway, there's a room on your right hand side. You can't go into any of the rooms. Everything is blocked off with rope or plexiglass. And so we kind of look in and we go upstairs, and then it's suddenly super easy. Like I don't have that feeling anymore. I feel totally fine. And so then I'm like, okay, well, now we're looking at all these, they have everything set up. So it's like the bedroom with the furniture and the dolls and the clothing. And you can kind of go and see the different bedrooms. There's also a theater upstairs as well, which is really weird and cool. Because this building has also been, as most historical buildings have, something of everything, right? A theater, a courthouse, a general store, all these things. But I did notice that when I was upstairs, I was fine.
It was
I didn't
have an to, issue. Wasn't it supposed to be made like some kind of mill or something?
Are you talking about the house itself?
Yeah, wasn't it made? It was rat-proofed, supposedly, and made it. It was supposed to be some kind of production for something.
Well, when we get into the history, there were a lot of things that went in there. The first thing that went in there, other than being a house itself, was a general store. And when I read that, I was like, well, I can't help but think, like, this is an old-fashioned, like, set in fantasy, high fantasy video game kind of a house. Think of my health, like, who puts a general store in their own home? There's a whole ton of other things that went in there, and we'll get to that.
And those things still exist. So, like, when you go visit it, you can see a piece that is the general store and see the courthouse. But so we were reading this pamphlet and we're reading all the information about it. And of course there's a section about the ghosts, right? The ghosts that everybody claims to see or experience throughout the house. And the thing that kind of stopped me was their daughter, Violet, I believe her name is,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Had committed suicide mm-hmm. in their backyard by, I believe, shooting herself in the chest.
Wow.
And so when I read that, and I hadn't really mentioned to my friend just how much I was struggling with feeling something in my chest, and was like, okay, that's a little weird and creepy, but, you know, again, like, maybe I am just sort of psyching myself out. And I will say that every time I have gone to the Whaley House, I have experienced something different.
Oh, so you went one and once.
I've been three times.
Wow. Okay.
The second time was a few years later, and my mom and I were in the dining room, and this little boy comes running in, and he kneels down and he picks up the tablecloth and is looking under the table, and his mom comes running after him. He's like, oh, you know, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, I'm playing with the doggy. And she goes, oh, get up. And she grabs him and she picks him up and takes him away. And my mom and I are standing there just in silence, because also in that pamphlet at the time, they did say
a family dog.
That there was a family dog on the property. It and to see this, like, five-year-old boy mm-hmm. who obviously is not reading this pamphlet knowing about the ghost dog is running through
and the playing dog, with the and dog. The dog had a name, a very distinct name, too, like Rosie or some name, I believe. I was reading on the history throughout the week, and dog had a their very distinct name. I'll get it.
I just remember vividly reading about a dog and then seeing this little boy playing with the dog. Mm-hmm. And then in that same trip going upstairs, and just I always try and isolate myself, because over my life I have had experiences that I can't explain in dealing with the paranormal. I like to think that I have a healthy dose of skepticism, because I think that you have to, right? In order to really be able to differentiate what could be unexplained versus something that can be explained, that you really have to sort of sit with it and not be so willing to believe everything. And so I try and isolate myself so that there isn't, if I'm going to have an experience of some kind, that it isn't being influenced by the presence of other people. Mm-hmm. And so I had gone upstairs by myself and I started approaching what was like the Whaley, him, the her, Violet's father, their bedroom. And as I am walking towards the doorway, there was just this overwhelming feeling of you need to turn around and go away. And it, like, the temperature dropped, and I just had this overwhelming feeling of you need to not be here right now. And I said, okay, heard, turned around and immediately went back downstairs and didn't go back up. The third time I went, which was maybe like a month and a half ago, so pretty recently, it had changed ownership. So now, instead of sort of being given a pamphlet and free walking. You meet outside with a tour guide and you enter through the back, and they sort of give you a brief history of the place and, you know, kind of talk about the ghosts a little bit and then send you inside, and then you can kind of walk around. But it definitely feels a little bit more like a tour at a museum versus sort of just wandering around like it used to.
Right.
And so we go in, we're standing in the courtroom, and she starts telling my mom and I this story, this experience that she had, where she was up in the theater giving a tour, and she saw somebody enter, I believe the theater, and she thought it was her supervisor. And then she saw her supervisor a couple hours later in a different outfit, and of course is like, you know, why did you go home and change? And he hadn't. Obviously, it wasn't her supervisor that she saw, right? And so she's telling us this story, and as we're talking, where she is standing, the door behind her, now also, grain of salt, it could have been a draft because we're standing near a bunch of like open windows and open doors, but the only one that moved, and there was no cross braids at the time, the only door that moved was the one that was directly behind her, and it fully opened. Actually, no, I think it closed towards her. And so my mom and I are both just kind of standing there listening to her. This door moves, and we're like, oh, okay. Maybe that was whatever she saw, being like, hey, I'm still here. Yep, that was me wanting to participate. So then we continue walking through, and the entire time I'm in the house, I feel drunk. I feel intoxicated. I can't walk straight. And I'm like holding on to the railings. I'm having a hard time, like my total vertigo. Like I just couldn't
walk straight. Can I ask you?
Yeah.
So when you've been to other places that are haunted,
mm-hmm.
have you ever felt like this, or it's just isolated to the Whaley House?
No, I definitely have. In fact, that first time I went to the Whaley House, we ended up taking one of those very silly haunted trolley tours, you know, where they're all dressed up and they have, you know, the candles and the thing, and they're, you know, trying to do all, you get the EMF readers. And that is actually a pretty crazy story to go on a full tangent, but we ended up in this room or this building that was a schoolhouse and a hospital and, you know, all of these things, and they hand everybody EMF readers. And I'm like, that's very cool. I would love to go on some sort of like genuine thing. But when you have a group of 20 people in this one room building and they're saying, oh, you know, there's wiring in the walls, like that could also affect EMF readers. And I'm like immediately rolling my eyes because it's like, I really wanted to experience something, and everybody here, it's very touristy, it's very kitschy. And, you know, everyone's, oh, it's making noise. And they're all like, you know, next to an outlet. So it's just, it was very disappointing. But I will say, in that same room, they were talking about how there's this little boy who mm-hmm. lives there, and he gets lonely and he tries to play with the tour guide. So he'll take the ropes across the rooms and he'll put them in a pile so that they have to, you know, come up the stairs and put them back. And that they say that he throws a ball down the stairs. And so they're giving us a little bit of history about this building. And I wish I could remember where it was specifically, but it was in Old Town, downtown San Diego. And we are standing and my back is to the staircase, which has, you know, open sort of normal railing. And I feel something on the top of my head that immediately I think it's a spider. I immediately think that a bug has like fallen and has landed on me. So I brush it off because I think I have a spider in my hair. And then I don't, you know, nothing comes down. And so continue giving the attention to the tour guide. And then it happens again. I'm brushing the top of my head. And again, my friend who was with me is like, are you good? I'm like, yeah, I just feels like something is on my head. And she's 6'2". So she's looking at me. She's like, no, you're like, you're good. There's nothing there. And then it happens a third time. And this time I don't try and rush to like get whatever I think it is off and just to kind of see what it is. And then I realized what it really felt like was that somebody was like stroking the top of my head. Like it felt like somebody was reaching through the railing and like playing with my hair. And immediately I was like, we need to go. We need to leave. Something is touching me and I don't know what it is. And it really startled me. So we got back outside and I was like, I don't think we need to go on this tour anymore. I think we can go home. So, and even when we were in Mary King's Close with that little girl's room, and, you know, everyone's like, oh, I felt them. They have goosebumps. And I'm standing there like, I don't feel anything. So I don't know. When we walked back out of that room and the tour guide's talking to us, I started feeling like I had a fever, which is a symptom of having the plague. So I definitely have had a lot of feelings in a lot of places that I have been to.
So you are pretty susceptible to paranormal activity.
I would say so.
You have a kind of like a natural EMF meter.
Yes. And I had a friend.
Or sensitive.
Yes. I had a friend in high school who was also very into this stuff. And she sort of equated me. She said that she felt that I was light, which is interesting because I think it also kind of correlates to my walking day life, my day to day. People, it's like a running joke with my family that people will tell me things without being prompted. I'll be sitting at a bar and the person next to me just turns to me and is like fully having like life story. And like, is there with their wife and is just taught. And my roommate's like, we have to go. Like, what's happening? I'm like, this man is holding me hostage. I don't know what to do. Or I'll be at the grocery store and I'm, you know, looking at produce and the person next to me will turn to me and just start full conversation with me. So even in with the living, people are just energy focused on me.
A few weeks ago, we had Joanne DeJesus on, and she is, Nick's applauding me for pronouncing her last name the right way. She was talking about how she got her abilities and what she feels when she goes to certain places. And it sounds like you may have some kind of sensitivity to things of the paranormal that are maybe untapped.
Yes. Yes. And I will say,
especially if your feelings are in correlation with stories.
Yes.
Like the whole chess thing.
Yes.
In the Whaley house where Violet, you know, ended up doing something to herself with a firearm.
Yes.
So that's what it sounds like.
Well, and it's hard, right? Because that's scary. That is having feelings that don't feel like yours or experiencing things that you can't talk yourself out of, because I love to talk myself out of it because I don't want to feel scared or, you know, like out of control of my situation and out of my being. I had, again, when I was in high school, my grandmother's best friend, they'd been best friends, for 30, 40 years. And her son passed away. And so we all ended up going to upstate California. That's where, 'cause I'm from California originally, to go to his memorial. And he was a water rafter, white water rafter. So we did a big trip down the Great American River. And we were in his sister's house staying there because all the people were camping and I don't really do outside. So we were staying in the house in a bed. And my friend was with me and we were getting ready to go wherever we were going. And the bathroom that we were in was connected to both bedrooms. So there were two doors on the bathroom. And it was one of the only bathrooms in the house. And we were taking our sweet time because we were, you know, 15. And so we were getting ready and we see the door handle kind of jiggle. And so we both are go, oh, you know, come on in. Like, we're just, you know, getting ready. And then nothing happens. And we're kind of like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the door opens and no one's standing there. And we're kind of like waiting for the person to come in. Nothing happens. The door closes. And we both were like, okay, I think it's time to go downstairs. I think we're done getting ready. And I think we need to leave. And I mentioned this to my grandmother's friend. And she said, that's so funny you say that, because that's the room I'm staying in. And that's the room my son used to stay in when he would stay at the house. And I've been feeling his presence around us as we've been preparing this trip. So it's so interesting that that's the door that opened, because that's where he used to stay.
Wow.
And I mean, again, it's just, you know, you hear that kind of thing and it's cool. But then at the same time, you're like, okay, and like now I need to leave this house. And like, I don't want it to talk to me or touch me anymore.
I'm glad you're on board tonight telling your tales about the Whaley house and all this, because I didn't know all this about you. And it sounds like you are very sensitive to things of that nature.
Yes.
And what they say in the world of paranormal, as I like to say, that it doesn't mean that you have the ability to sense ghosts. But another theory is that when something happens at a certain place, people's energy have nowhere to go.
Right.
And because of the experience, the traumatic experience of whatever happened in haunted places, you're actually reliving like history through the energy that lingers there.
Yes.
So you're feeling exactly what happened. So like you go back to the Whaley House, that heaviness on your chest, mm-hmm. you're feeling the unfortunate event of Violet taking her own life through what happened there many, many years ago.
Yes.
So it could be multiple things, but that's one of the theories.
Well, and then I forgot about this too. When we were at the Whaley House this last time, when I was walking around and I felt drunk, I felt like I was having incredible vertigo. We found out that we were there on the anniversary of her death.
Wow.
So I mean, at that point, now that I'm a little bit older, I am more open to having those interactions, especially if I am the one who's sort of expressing. Because I feel like now when I walk into a place that I am told is supposed to be something, that I walk in trying to be very open and trying to communicate that I'm open to receiving if there is something. So I was like, oh, if that's what I was feeling the first time I came here and this is the anniversary of her death, like maybe, you know, I'll feel something. And I will say I didn't have that same feeling in my chest, which I think also just lends itself to the fact that every time I've gone to the Whaley House specifically, that it has been something different, right? Mm-hmm. That I'm not going in and potentially feeling a manufactured thing, whether it's of my own creation or of these people trying to, you know, continue to spin the tale of it being so haunted.
Right.
But yeah, the last time I was there, I didn't feel the pressure on the chest, but I couldn't walk until we left. And then suddenly it was like, just walking into the Whaley House, the energy, the atmosphere, it feels so heavy compared to when you literally step outside the doors. And it's a pretty open space. There are lots of huge windows and big doors that they try and keep open because it's an old house. They don't have
AC.
So it's, you know, California in the summer. So they do try and keep things open to keep air moving. And it still feels so, so heavy. It's one of my favorite things. My family always like takes a little trip down to San Diego to go to the Whaley House. My mom and I, we love it.
That's awesome. So that sounds like when we do, because I didn't always do a paranormal podcast. I actually started with paranormal investigation.
Right.
So all those EMF meters and all that equipment, I do have. I still have. Joey, it was last year, I think, we went to Van Cortlandt Park at 10 o'clock at night with all the equipment and walked Van Cortlandt Park at 10 o'clock at night. And we brought out all the equipment. It was a long time since I used it when I broke it out that night. But we're looking into investigations. It sounds like we might have to bring you to see.
I would love that.
Yeah. So on the note of the Whaley House, we're going to hand it over to this segment of Nick's Notes, brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters. Nick, can you tell us the history of the Whaley House so people listening know how much stuff happened there and why Ashley is having these experiences?
Oh, of course. I hope you don't mind. What people can't see when we're doing this podcast is I will write down a lot, especially when there's other guests here, and I will write down notes and questions. So I just want you to know, while you're talking, a lot of the times I like to make notations because I have some questions I want to ask you.
Yeah, of course.
I'll start with the history first, and then I'll jump back into some of the things you were talking about because it correlates to some, and then there's some other stuff I had to look up because I'm not an expert in everything, and when I don't, I like to do my research. Billy makes a point of, I actually do like to sit in the library. Like one of the things I read, this is actually from an article from the LA Dispatch, you know, the LA Herald from 1873. So the initial history is from an actual newspaper article that was scanned in. All right. So this is even before the house is built. Let's start there because it starts there. You know, Thomas Whaley knew there was a history of the land before he bought it. And this goes back to Jim Robinson. Okay, they called him Yankee Jim.
I'm sure you got some of this information too, like throughout your tours and reading stuff there.
Yes. So, yeah, they really do. The tour starts where this story starts.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so Yankee Jim, I had a kind of conflicting. You might know better, Ash, from being there. I know he's about 6'3", 6'4". Some say the original article that I read says he was a Canadian Frenchman. Then if you go read like other pages, it says was born in New York City. They both agree that he was someone who would hang around mining camps and lure these miners away from the camps and away from their people and then rob them. That was what he, and then he was slippery because he would get out of a lot of these, he would get arrested a lot, and he got out of it a lot until the last time. The last time he was arrested, see now, the article I read, the original article says he was arrested for a boat. Some of the other ones say he was arrested for stealing horses. Mm. But he stole from Joseph C. Stewart and Enos Whale, he had two accomplices, James Grayson Loring and William Harris. And what's interesting is they were given a year. They were tried. All three were tried. All three were convicted. The two partners were given a year. And he was given the sentence of death by hanging. I think that's because he slipped the law so often that they were just kind of like, no. And interesting fact is, I don't know why you would let this happen. Wouldn't happen in today's day and age. Two of the people on the jury were the two people he robbed. Like, that's not going to go well for you, my guy, if you're sitting there and two of the people you robbed or the two people you robbed are sitting on the jury. You're not going to win because they were there.
Small town.
Yeah. So he's tried and convicted on 818, 1852. He's persecuted by James G. Robinson. Weird connection. Not the same person. So James Robinson is tried by James Robinson. Different James Robinsons, though. It's very weird. The prosecutor at the time was also James Robinson. I thought that was really cool. The judge orders him to be kept in jail, San Diego jail, until a month later, September 18th. Then he's executed. After he refuses to say anything at trial, like he won't, you know, the whole time he's sitting there thinking, they're not actually going to hang me because he's gotten away with it so often, even up until the fact that they did do it. And his accomplices, like I said, they got 1 year in jail each. Now, I found this information in the LA Herald from 1873, so this is not too far away from when it happened. You know, this is 1852, and then 20 years later, I'm finding an article, an actual written article in a newspaper. After his death and the building of the house, sightings become kind of common, and the house is built in 1855, not too long after his hanging. San Diego plays this up, though. He's Jim Robinson's like a San Diego spirit.
So he's hung at this point. Did you mention how he died while he was hanging?
They attempted. So they kept pulling the cart. The mules kept pulling the cart.
This was. They didn't take into account how tall he was, because usually the people at that time period were like anywhere from 5'5" to like 5'10", 5'8", my height, 5'7". And when they went to hang him, it didn't. His feet kind of hit the floor, so he like slowly strangled.
Well, and you can see that because they have the furniture from the time, and it's all very small, but they also do have some clothing and shoes that were owned by the Whaley family. So you really can see how tiny they were. And like the hallways, I mean, even the doorways are pretty small. So yeah, 6'3" in that time was quite large.
Yeah. I mean, he was a physically imposing character, and that was one of the things that, you know, I thought it was weird that was in the article. It's like, well, he's not pleasant to look at, but he's physically imposing, or some kind of expression like that. I was like, well, you know, 6'4" guy in the 1850s is going to be physically imposing, especially he's brutally strong enough that he lures these miners out. These are miners. So miners have to chop with a pickaxe all day long. So these are strong men themselves, and he's robbing them. And it doesn't say at gunpoint. It's just saying he's robbing them. So, like, you have to be a big dude to be able to do that with these guys who are working out all day long, more or less, right? So 1860, even Thomas Whaley, I mean, like I said, San Diego makes a point. He wanders downtown. He wanders. That's what they say. You know, they're playing that up, just like it's Colorado where they play up the airport, right? There have been sightings as far back as Thomas Whaley himself hearing the footsteps. Now, I'll get into the spirits and what they allege to do, like individual spirits, in a second. But that's just, that's the history of the land before the house is even built. So now Thomas Whaley buys the land and starts construction, knowing full well the history, buys it in 1855 with plans to build. It's a Greek Revival style architecture. Not that that matters much, but That's part of the facts, right? And the family moves in 1857. So it's about 2 years. Shortly after they move in, it's not just a residence. They open a general store. That's where things start to kind of go wild, right? So the family moves in and we have death or more deaths, right? They have 3 children at this point. It's Thomas and Anna. They're married. And I'll get into like his history in a second, like his familial history. But they're married. They have 3 children. Their youngest child, I believe at the time, is Thomas Whaley Jr. He's 18 months old, dies of scarlet fever, unfortunately. Okay. A few months later, a fire burns down the home. Well, it burns into the home and it completely demolishes the general store. So they pack up. They go to San Francisco. Leave San Diego, go to San Francisco. 1868, now with 5 children. So they lost one, they're down to 2, and then they come back with 3 new children, they move back to the house. With the return of the house, with the return of the family, the house becomes a headquarters for the county courthouse. They convert a room into like a theater because they have a theater troupe. The very first theater troupe of San Diego operates out of there. Refurbished, they reopened the general store. They also had things, like you mentioned earlier, a granary. They had a ballroom, they had a billiard hall, they had a school. Okay, so they had a lot of things in this location. When you look at it in today's context and today's relative of house size, you've been there. It's not like a mansion.
Sure isn't.
But back then, you talk about that was probably pretty big. So relative to today, it's not like it's not like one of these $40 million mansions we see celebrities living in and saying, oh, poor me, I'm here. This was, an average. Today it was probably something that looks pretty average size. Not that it's probably a little bigger, but so 1870, though, however, people start moving away from Old Town. New Town starts to develop and they move away and Old Town gets this feeling of abandoned city, right? Like ghost town. Uh-huh. And at this point, again, they had the courthouse in there. 1871, armed bandits come in and they hold Anna Whaley, which is the wife, they hold her at gunpoint for courthouse records. That's really like a turning point in the history of the house. That's kind of like where Thomas starts to feel like, despite his son dying and the fire, and now this is kind of where he's starting to think to go. Doesn't move him out yet. 2 of his daughters get married. The more famous of the two is Violet. Now, Violet marries this man, George Bertolacci. I think that's how it's pronounced, which he was a con man. He was marrying her to try and get a dowry and then just disappeared. Now she's divorced, she's depressed. And at first, she tries to pull an Ophelia, like Shakespeare. She tries to jump into, excuse me. I don't know if it was a chasm, but there's something near the house. I apologize. She tries to jump. She's failed suicide attempt. So next thing she does, she walks into the parlor of the house with her father's 32, and shoots herself dead in the chest. And that's the end of Violet Whaley.
And the couch that she passed away on is still in the house. It is in the living room.
We talk about energy and things being attached all the time, right, Billy?
Big time energy from when it was built. And it's crazy. And like I said, your energy's got to go somewhere, and there's so many people that was in that house, so many parts of, like, so many traumatic events that it's embedded in there. And then, remember, we like, as ghost investigators, like to say that there's negative energy. And negative energy happened in that house, and negative energy is kind of hard to rid of.
Yeah.
And I always use Ghostbusters 2 as a reference. You know, have you ever seen Ghostbusters 2? The mood slime, where you have the negative energy making negative things manifest through the slime.
Oh my God, it's the Scolari brothers.
So that's what I like to use as an analogy. And when you have this negative energy and these negative events that happened within that house, it's forever there.
Yeah.
And you just said they kept the couch that she died on, which means she went outside to shoot herself, no?
Yeah, I believe they said that she shot herself in their backyard. And that her dad was the one to find her.
And she wasn't dead yet.
Yes, and brought her back in. And
so she bled out.
She bled out on the couch.
See, and they kept the couch.
Yes.
Which means that her
blood. That's what they say anyways.
Right. We is I don't know how much you can confirm it. If, you know, if right. they may say it for, oh, that's going to draw attention to the house, you know. But if it is the real couch and her blood was on it and she died there and took her last breath there and everything else that happened in the house, that's significant for paranormal terms.
Right, for sure. I mean, you know, we talk about negative energy. We can talk about positive energy. I'm going to get into the spirits in a second. And if that couch is still there, I know a couple of brothers that would not want to leave that there. They'd probably burn the couch. just saying. Right, Bill? Right. There's at least two brothers I know that would want to burn the couch and salt the whole house. But so let's talk about the spirits, at least the main ones. There's a ton.
And I believe that house, their last name is in California as well, right? Or am I wrong? The Winchester Mystery House, isn't it?
The Winchester is. It's more north. I think it's in San Jose.
Yeah, that's what he's referring to, by the way. The
Winchester. The Winchester. Oh.
The Winchester family. They are a great family. Two personal heroes of mine. But so there's a few main spirits in this house, right? And although Anna and Violet, and see, I'm going to go through this whole list here, Thomas Jr. and Corinne Lillian, okay, which is another child of Thomas and Anna, and George and Francis all died in this house. Like, most of the family died in this house. The only one I think that did not die in this house, there's two. Thomas Sr., he died away from the house. And Anna, the child, not the wife. The wife, I believe, died in the house. Anna, the child, I believe, died away from the house. And it was a little confusing at first when I was reading it, but I'm pretty sure Anna, the child, is the one that was not at home. So, and you also have, don't forget, Yankee Jim on the property. So, let's start with Yankee Jim, speaking of. And by the way, I looked up the dog. Dolly Varden was the name of the dog that you're talking about. Okay, that one had not come up, but I went and just did some quick looking, and that's the name of the dog that you might have been talking about, yes. Ashley. Dolly Varden. So, but big, first spirit, Yankee Jim. Okay, eerie noises, louder disembodied footsteps, cold spots, and... It's interesting because you said the first time you were there, you walked in on that first floor and you experienced tightness of chest, correct?
Correct.
One of the things they say about Yankee Jim's spirit is he brings out tightness in people's chests.
Huh.
Okay. And I think that had a lot to do with when he was choking to death, right? And you're being hanged. Well, either way, even if you're hanged properly, you're going to experience tightness here because all the air has got nowhere to go. All right. It's going to snap your neck. Yeah, but that doesn't mean you die. People have been hanged and had their neck snapped and not died. They died from suffocation. So that would lead to a tightness of the chest. So that's one of the things that they make mention of being attributed to Yankee Jim. So I found it interesting that that was the first thing you went in there. And this is the first big spirit that has to do with it.
Yeah, I literally said to my friend, it feels like I can't breathe.
So that triggered memory for me as I was doing my research.
Oh, that gave me goosebumps. Okay.
So now the second one, right? The second big ghost is baby Thomas Jr. Tiny footsteps, baby crying, giggling from nowhere. So, you know, this is where it's kind of like almost like a more positive energy because he hasn't had time to be, baby has not had time to like really get negative in the world and experience all the hardships that could go on. I mean, you know, obviously dying is a hardship, but you know, it's a giggling kid. So this is a kid really looking to play. So whether it's playing with the dog, and maybe that's why the dog is playing with all the other kids, or just going around, that's something that they talk about. You know, if you hear crying or you hear some giggling just out of nowhere, tiny little footsteps, like tiny little paw steps. Okay, so that was baby Thomas. Now, Violet, this is the big one, right? Because obviously suicide in and of itself is going to draw a lot of negative energy in, and the fact that she did die in the home after not one, but two attempted suicides, you know, that's going to bring a lot. So now, woman lingering on the second floor. You mentioned on the second floor, one of those times that you went there, right? You could feel cold spots.
Yes.
Okay. Second floor has the most cold spots, according to the research I did.
Okay.
Because of the reported feelings of melancholy that Violet experienced. She killed herself over this con man of a husband. Now, she was young, and younger people, the world is ending, is a thing when they break up with someone. Forget finding out your husband really was a con man, never really loved you, and only married you trying to get some money. Couldn't get the money, and then dipped. So, like, that would definitely lead to some coldness and some emotional emptiness. So again, I found it interesting that on the second floor, that's where you experience cold spots.
And the feeling was very much, you need to go away. Like it was it felt, negative is not the right word, but it just felt, like you don't want to be here for this. And I said, okay. And I turned around and I walked away.
Which people that are depressed, that's something that
they hide away from the world.
They hide away from the world. Most people that are depressed, I'm not a scientist or a psychologist, but some people that are depressed, they don't show their emotions. You don't know that person's depressed. Robin Williams,
yeah,
right? Hiding behind a smile, and no one would ever know, you know? But for Violet, she was upset. Maybe no one knew, and what you described is maybe her saying, go away. You know, yeah. Like, don't be here. I'm about to do something.
Right. Maybe
she's reliving the tragic events, and she's just telepathically, mentally, or with this paranormal energy telling you, stop walking this direction.
Yeah.
Go the other way.
Right. Not to make light of it, but you ever seen any kind of sitcom or family show where the kid's like, I want to die. Not to make light of it. Go away. Leave me alone. And then they slam the door, right? Because the world is ending. I mean, this is over nothing in the shows. This is a legitimate thing that Violet went through. So again, that's an emotion that it works on a human level because it's true. And that's what we go through. So that might be where you were getting that go away message.
Yeah.
Thomas Sr., even though he didn't die in the house, and I found this interesting, even though he did not die in the house, some people have claimed to see him at the top of the stairs dressed in a frock, which just means how they dressed at the time, and his top hat. That's it with him usually.
I believe they have his top hat.
Well, there you go. Energy attached to an object again, right? So, and then there's some random things that pop up. They say mist or some crystals that will swing in where the ballroom was with nothing around. No activity, no wind or anything like that. There'll be shadows appearing and disappearing in the house, which we've covered that ad nauseum. And then curtains moving. Now, I know you say in the summer it's fine, but the workers who maintain the house will say that they will shut for the night and they will still see curtains moving, like with all the windows closed, all the doors sealed, still see them moving. So that's just some of that. And then there's also celebrities that got into the mix. We all know Regis Philbin is, most of us probably know who Regis Philbin has been off the air for a while. But Regis Philbin was said to have gone to... Right, yeah. But he was said to have gone to the house at one point, and he met with a spirit matching Anna's description. So Anna, the wife. When he flipped on the lights, though, nothing but her portrait was in the room. So, I mean, it was just random, but the fact that Regis Philbin felt the urge to talk about it or needed to talk about it, I found that kind of interesting. Now we can go into the background on Thomas. So he was born in 1823 on October 5th, in October, great month, in New York City. He was the seventh, and I really, like, I know we talk about numbers, the seventh of 10 children. I swore, and he only had six kids. If he would have had a seventh child, I would have been thinking about the seventh child of the seventh child kind of a deal. It's usually seventh son of a seventh son, but still. He went to California in 1849, was doing some business because of the gold rushes out there. Left, went back to New York, married Anna in August of 1853 until finally moving he and his new young wife to California in December of 1853. Then obviously built a house in 1855 after Jim Robinson, 1852. After Violet's death and the last child, which was Corinne's broken engagement. So Corinne actually had an engagement too. And with all the stuff that went around the family, that became a broken engagement. That person left. Thomas finally says, you know what, enough is enough. Builds a new home, moves the family out, where the house is left vacant for decades. He dies in 1890. And Anna Amelia, his daughter, dies in 1905. After Anna Amelia dies, Francis, which is his son, finally says, you know what, we're going to go back. And goes back to the house in 1909. He starts as a caretaker, kind of a deal. And Anna, his wife, Thomas Sr. dies in the house in 1913. Francis, the son, dies in 1914. And finally, the last Whaley dies in the house, which is Corinne, in 1953. 1960, a few years later, the museum is opened. It's appeared on a lot of paranormal. It's appeared on Fact or Faked Paranormal Files. It's appeared on Ghost Adventures.
Hey, everyone's favorite.
And it actually was mentioned, not on because it was the animated one, but it was mentioned in Hellboy, Blood and Iron in 2007, which was I found that really cool because Hellboy really delves into his paranormal the right way. So all that got mentioned. And that's roughly what I've got for history, but I do have a couple of questions. So we talked about the first floor. We talked about the second floor. Now, you also mentioned that you kind of felt the drunkenness or the vertigo-ness the third time around, the most recent time, mm-hmm. right? In the Whaley House, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So there was a granary. Now, I don't know if you know, when you make ales or beers, certain kinds, they come from grains. So that could be that. They also had a ballroom, which if this is a host to a ballroom, that probably means we're having some parties. Probably means we're drunk. So what I find really interesting is, and I know you mentioned earlier on that your parents had always been kind of attuned to the spooky and had done the haunted houses and stuff. So playing the skeptic and then playing the not skeptic. The skeptic is just maybe your mind is mentally prepped for this stuff.
Sure.
And that's fine. But playing the non-skeptic, and I want to look about, there's about 14 or 15 different types of empath. And the two that I see that you kind of fall into, based on what you described in your story, is emotional empath and physical empath. Now, emotional empath, the feelings, so you talk about people are always coming up to you. You can feel the energies in the air. They just randomly will tell you stories.
No, right.
Okay, so that's the emotional empath. All right, and then there's the physical empath. Now, physical empath is someone who can feel from the items or the things that are there. So you around some things, and you can feel like the energy of Violet, or you can feel the energy of Jim Robinson, or the kid, or the dog. So all those things kind of play, and being an empath will kind of make you more open to feeling those. So I bring that up because you mentioned you were at other locations and you still feel these things. So being physically there is what triggers it for you. So it kind of gives me the impression that even if you went in with the open mind of saying, you know, I'm going to experience this, which you don't, because you talked about how the kitschness of that one event really kind of,
yeah,
you weren't happy about that. So you don't go in hoping for X, Y, or Z, but you do feel it. So that gives me the sense that you can have these empath feelings or empath predispositions.
I will say I had a roommate who really struggled with their mental health. And when they finally moved out, I remember calling my mom and just saying, the apartment is quiet. And I don't mean because he was a loud person. Anytime I came home, I just knew if he was home or not. And when he finally moved out, I was like, the kittens are at play. The energy was gone, and it was such a relief. Like, the apartment just felt for me so much lighter. But the way I said it was, it's quiet.
Yeah.
I feel like I can hear myself think again. So yeah, energies, and even with just on a day to day with the living, is something that I very much am attuned to.
Yeah. Empathy, people that are, I guess, what's a good empathetic?
You could say empathetic, but that's really like just feeling someone's emotions. If we're talking about like the paranormal, you could just say an empath of emotional ability versus an empathetic person, which is someone who just kind of feels for someone else. Like, I feel sympathy for you, or I feel sorry for you. That's empathy. But then there's an empath, which is much more attuned to the paranormal version of it.
People that are like depressed, you're saying your roommate was dealing with like depression or mm-hmm. mental health issues, they have this heaviness that people can sense and bring the energy into a room.
Unless they're Robin Williams.
And then you have the ability that Nick and I believe you might have, makes it stronger for you.
Yeah.
So when you called your mom and said the room feels quiet, it's because that person's negative energies was alleviated by moving out.
Yeah.
And it, like I said, we think that you might have something. So.
Ooh, that's exciting and also scary.
Yeah, no, but that's actually a good thing because, you know, like, I like if, you know, we're talking to Joanne a few weeks back and now you, when people have these abilities, it's good in a sense because let's just say, rhetorically speaking, but a pre-invite, that sure. We go to a place that's haunted, mm-hmm. right? Hypothetically speaking. And we don't tell you anything about this place. We don't say, this is what happened here, mm-hmm. right? We bring you in. And we're telling you, we're bringing you to a location that may be haunted, but sure. We don't give you the history, right? We surprise you. Mm-hmm. We say, hey, meet us here. We're going here at this time, this date. And you go there and your leg starts hurting, right? I'm just trying to make a scenario up in my head. And then history turns out that this person had gangrene and ended up getting real sick. And
or were on a battlefield and someone had their leg taken off.
Exactly. That would actually kind of show us, our studies, Nick, I, and Joey, that, hey, she is sensitive to this stuff because yeah. We didn't give her any kind of heads up of where we were going. We just kind of threw her on the spot. And she said her leg started hurting. And on this battlefield, John Smith lost his leg and bled out and yeah. died. That would actually be a good point to prove that people with these abilities is the real deal.
Right.
Because when we brought Joanne on, we you know, Joey and I drilled her with questions. And there's people that are skeptics and don't believe in psychics and stuff like that. I was kind of on the fence with it until she started saying things that she shouldn't have known.
I did listen to that episode because I feel the same way, right? That, and there are always people who pray, right? So especially when it comes to like a medium or a sensitive looking to prey on people's pain, right? And to make a quick buck or to feel important. And I remember hearing about it and that I remember that Joey was very like, she knew things she couldn't have known. And then listening to the episode and I messaged Joey and I was like, how did she know about the cigar? Like it, that for me was very crazy.
That particular day that she was on fell into this next couple of days was significant because my friend, his birthday was coming up, but not only his birthday, but he took his own life days before his birthday. And we were supposed to have a cigar together. It never happened. Then she said birthday cake. And there's no way of her even knowing about his birthday coming up.
Right.
And then she said a couple other things that she shouldn't have known. To an itinerary and a plan that I was supposed to go on this trip and people were planning out things that were supposed to happen. And I was having that conversation with him. And I was also having a conversation that I was afraid to fly because I don't like flying. And I was like, I'm afraid to fly. I got to fly by myself because I'm going to have to miss the flight for something that came up that I had to reschedule. Things that she shouldn't have known, she knew. So if you did go to a spot with the group and we didn't give you information and you started having these feelings in tune to some part of your body, like your chest, like you said with the Whaley House, it kind of proved like you have an ability. You have something yeah. that you're not keen on yet, but you're learning. We're going to take a momentary pause and we're going to get right back to the Whaley House. Welcome back, everybody. So we were just talking about some abilities that Ashley might have and finished up on the history of the Whaley House. And I wanted to continue with asking you your personal opinion on why you think, being that you've been here on three occasions, right?
Yeah.
Three occasions. Why do you think the Whaley House is considered, because all the research I've done throughout the last week and a half, knowing that like this was the date we're penciling you in to come on, I've heard of the Whaley House. You know, been doing paranormal research and investigating for 20 plus, 25, 23, around there, that many years. And I've heard the Whaley House mentioned quite a few times. I've never went in depth to research the history like Nick did or what the apparitions are or the types of haunting it might be. Which it looks like it's like a residual haunting, like a telltale sign of like a residual haunting. But I've heard it. It never rang my bells for it to be the most haunted. So in the course of researching and looking it up, and I actually watched a YouTube video today at lunch about the Whaley House, why do you think that this is considered the most haunted house in the United States? And I'm asking you specifically because you've been there three times.
Sure. I feel like a lot of the times, as we mentioned earlier, that anything that is a haunted location or a supposed haunted location loves to claim we are the most haunted, nothing will beat us, right? Because that gets people in the door. Whether or not it's true, whether or not people have genuinely experienced anything, right, they're going to really sell it in order to prove a point, I think.
Right, like that's the sign in every coffee shop's window. World's best cup of coffee.
Yep.
World's best pizza.
Yes, exactly. That's, world's famous pizza.
It's Ray's on 14th.
Right? So it's hard. But I think genuinely, having had so many different kinds of experiences there, I will say that on the other side of it, nothing has ever felt aggressive. Nothing has felt scary. And I think that a lot of the times when people want to go somewhere that's haunted, right, they think about an asylum or a prison and it's dark, negative, scary energy, right? And then they decorate it for Halloween and it's full of jump scares. Every time I've been, it's a beautiful building. It's incredibly historical. It's been everything it could be. Like even the fact that it has a theater upstairs, right? But then
was that the theater they built at that time that was located upstairs?
Yes.
Or that's something that was put in through renovations and years and...
No, I do believe it was what they used. It's honestly, it's probably about the size of the room we're currently sitting in. So it's itty bitty, with a very small stage with like a couple curtains, and they do keep a ghost light on it, which I don't know if you're familiar with like theatrical ghost lore, but the ghost light for the ghost.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they do have a ghost light that stays lit. And then just a few rows of seating.
Rapid fire here. Next question.
Yeah.
Real quick. This is because we're on this subject.
Yeah.
Has the house undergone any renovations, modern times?
Not that I've experienced.
Not.
I'm glad that you said that. I know you were there, but from what I've read, it's a historical site. So now they really can't do much to it. In fact, they just had a court appearance there, like the last year or so.
Yes.
For the first time in however many years, I want to say almost 100 years that they've used that courthouse. They actually had the current court went down and ran some BS one, but they ran an actual hearing, but not a hearing, but they ran a court procedure in the actual original courthouse.
They have a plaque with like a picture of the judge. Cause yeah, that had happened between the second and third time I was there. And they were big on talking about how cool it was that they came down and held court in the courthouse.
So we mentioned this fairly recently, like with historic landmarks. I know when a place is made a landmark, like officially,
mm-hmm.
that you cannot compromise the structure on the outside.
Correct.
You can build additions to it if it doesn't take away the structure, the integrity of the outside structure. But you can also add things without breaching the, I guess, contract of an historic landmark, but you can do things internally. And the reason I'm asking that is maybe some of the activity that occurs there is because of something that was done inside to the house. You know, that's what they say is like, you know,
right.
An old house that's, people say that paranormal activity starts happening when they start doing something
disturb
to the house.
Disturb something, right.
You know, and that's why I'm asking. Now, maybe that's not the case for the Whaley House because it has a history. Like they said that when they got there and started building on the property, that they experienced activity upon building the house, the Whaley family, you know, from Yankee Jim, from his paranormal energy being there already. But I'm just throwing it out there that maybe the activity is more rampant because of the fact that things are being done in this historic place.
I will say a lot of the, so there's one room that they sort of have artifacts that they've unearthed in the backyard. I believe there was a well of some kind that they did a little excavation on, and it basically was a dump. It was a garbage. It was a hole in the ground that they threw their garbage into. And so you have all these broken pieces of china or coins and spoons and all kinds of things that they have come across in the backyard that they have now put in to the house in a specific room. There are some clothes. They also have, which was very popular at the time, but the, I believe they're called death wreaths. And it is the artwork where they take the hair of someone who has passed and they weave it into flowers and they make pieces of art. And it is supposed to be this like family heirloom made from the hair of the deceased. And I know there are quite a few of those also hanging in the general store.
So two quick things. I'm going to ask you my second question first because I don't want to forget it. You mentioned like no aggressive feeling there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that strikes me as odd because maybe Violet doesn't have the aggressive because it was self-inflicted. Thomas Jr., scarlet fever. The others, natural causes. I would think Jim Robinson would bring a lot of negative, aggressive feelings considering he was hanged and he's the very first spirit that's like attached to this property, allegedly. And you would feel like that would be the aggression there. And you said no aggression whatsoever, even from this career criminal.
Correct. The most intense feeling I had was when I was on the second floor, and that it just, it felt very, I don't even know how to truly explain it. Cause it almost felt like we had kind of talked about that almost protective, like this, something is cold. Something is feeling very not correct coming up here. And it started to kind of startle me because it was such a temperature shift and the energy changed so much. And I just had this overwhelming feeling of like, you need to go. And so I said, okay. And I turned around and I walked back downstairs. So it felt very, almost protective. And even the not being able to breathe, it didn't feel like I was being forced upon me. It just really felt like, I don't know if anyone's had COVID, but when you have that sort of like the flooding where you just like can't catch your breath and it just feels like a weight is sitting on your chest is what that felt like for me. So I didn't ever experience anything that felt scary or harmful or malicious. It just felt like energy.
So this feeling, just before I jump into my actual question that's popped in, was it near the top of the stairs or as you walked into the second floor? Like,
so I hit the top of the stairs and I turned right to start walking towards the, I think it was the master bedroom, I believe is what it is. And I believe it was Thomas and Anna's bedroom. And as before I could get to the door, because it's not a big upstairs, there are, I believe it's like three bedrooms and the theater. And so I was walking towards what would have been the master bedroom. And I just, this overwhelming feeling, and I just didn't even finish exploring the I just turned around and went right back down the stairs.
See, to me, that kind of correlates a couple of things, right? Obviously, Violet is known to be up on the second floor and the cold spots and the melancholy. But as you hit the stairs and you're approaching Thomas, which is weird because, again, Thomas did not die in this house, but they have heard, you know, there have been mentions of seeing him at the top of the stairs, and you mentioned the hat is actually there. Maybe that's a protect my daughter mode and, like, get out.
See, my theory with it is that something about this house, he wanted his family to be there. Even through the fire, he went from New York, he brought his young wife to California, to San Diego, to build the house, to stay there. The house was burned down. They left.
Well, in San Diego to San Francisco is a solid 10, 12 hours away.
Yeah, they went to San Francisco and they ended up coming back to San Diego to try to do it all again, mind you, with the loss of children, and came back with additional children to the same house where, hey, that's some bad luck, but we're going to try again. Like, I would never go back there. So it seems to me that he just has this, I have to get this right. And he died with that, like, I have to get this right still. This is like my hard work. To me, that's maybe why his soul is there. And then there's these things about haunted objects. You say his top hat is apparently there, right? Yeah. So maybe that was something that he personally liked or loved and kept dear to him. Maybe that was his best ensemble. And the hat was the icing on the cake. And he likes that hat so much that his spirit stays there attached to the hat because the hat is in the house.
Well, and to really get into the idea or question of what is the afterlife and if is there an afterlife and what does that look like, you know, when we pass over. But if you experience that kind of level of loss and your entire family essentially died in this house. If it was me and my family, I don't care where I died. I'm going to that house and we're going to have a party in the afterlife. You know what I mean? So it also could just be this attachment to the people and wanting to be around his kids and his wife.
Right. I think a lot, because this will be my last question, really. So, you know, you mentioned a few things were dug up. When you go, and I know you said early on that they kind of let you go on your own, which mm-hmm. is great, because it doesn't color your vision, unless do they give you some kinds of some heads up or some kind of like guidance per se, maybe that's the wrong word, but where they're kind of, you know, like we talked about a haunted museum where they kind of give you a warning in advance, like this may occur. Anything like that pop up when you walk into the Whaley House?
So the first time I went, no. The first time we went, I just knew it had, you know, the haunted, this is a haunted.
There was a sign.
Set, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was going to be part of this like nighttime trolley tour that we were taking, that we were going to go to the Whaley House. And, but other than that, oh my God, this must have been like over 10 years ago now. No. So they gave us a little like folded up pamphlet that kind of gave you a history of the building. And then it did give you inside a breakdown of the ghosts, right? And then when you're walking through in like a normal museum fashion, they'll have like a portrait of somebody and like a little blurb about them, or this thing was found, this is what this would have been used for, or this is the courthouse and this is the history of that. So it was very much more museum versus ghost tour,
right,
if that makes sense. And the first time I went in, I really went in blind. I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't open and like immediately start reading this pamphlet because I didn't even know what was going to be inside of it, because I assumed that we were going to have some sort of guide or person or like, and to this day, you can still walk up to some of the guides and they'll have stories and more information you can get from them. But now I do know that it's under new ownership and they have adjusted how they let you experience the house. So now instead of just walking through the front door and kind of meandering around the house, you meet at this wagon, which is supposed to be the site of where the, you know, he was hanged, right? And then they walk you through the back and they talk about Violet and they kind of talk about the ghosts and the history of the house. But they sort of preface it, and, you know, they're kind of wearing more like old-timey looking clothing. So it definitely feels a little bit more kitschy. But then once you go into the house, you are sort of given free rein, but then you kind of work your way through the house and leave. So it is a little bit more suggested. It is a little bit more guided now with the new ownership of the house. But certainly nothing like when we went on this little trolley tour, which, you know, those are fun and they have a good time, but it really was like we went into this other house and I was like, we're going to give you EMF readers and they're probably going to go off. And then you have this group of tourists and it's, you know, midnight and they're going off and everyone's freaking out. And it's like this whole big hullabaloo, you know? So it's, I've experienced both sides of the coin of sort of planting the seeds and encouraging the mania. I'm not a
fan of these historical places. So Gettysburg is like another location that's super duper haunted. And I went there with my family the first time. And then we went, that first time we went was all correlated with like two other spots in Pennsylvania. That's close proximity to Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. But the second time we went there, we literally stayed in Gettysburg. And we did a haunted night walk, or a ghost walk at night. And it literally says in the pamphlet, we're going to take you to the most haunted sites in Gettysburg, walking through the town. And when you buy the tickets and you read the sign, you already have it in your head. Now, this is when I was younger, you know, just starting to get into the whole paranormal thing. So I'm already buying these tickets under the assumption I'm going to see some shit. Like, right. I'm going to get scared, you know? Now, like, you grow up and, you know, you marinate in your hobby. And for me, it's learning different tactics to investigate. Like, when I show guys pictures of ghost things, I don't point out what's in it. I just tell me what you see. I sent a picture to Joey and Nick the other day. I'm like, I'm just not gonna give you any where, what we're looking at. Just try to find something in this picture that looks weird, because it was sent to me and someone told me what was in it, but I wanted to make sure they saw it without telling them. Right. So they weren't targeted to that area. You know what I mean?
It's like when you hear disembodied voice, here, yeah. And then they'll say, oh, did you hear they said this? Like, yes. Well, yes, now it sounds like that, but exactly. It sounded like nothing.
Right. I have an EVP on my phone. I play it for people. I tell them the story. I play the EVP, and people will tell me, like, I hear it. Some people tell me exactly what it's saying. Some people are just like, I hear a whisper, but I can't make it out.
Right.
The minute you say, it said...
Green Needle
or John Smith. You're going to hear John Smith, right. Green Needle. You know what I mean? Same thing with pictures. Like if I show you a picture of a tombstone and I say to you, what do you see? You might see something without me referring to what it is. But if I say, look at the tombstone, you see the face? And you'll be like, yeah, I see it. I see the face. Like here's, it's, you know, you can't do that. Same thing with these ghost tours. You know, like if there's a sign that says, yeah, it's a ghost tour and you're going to, you already have it in your mind. Your like your body's on this defense, you know. Yeah. Like, oh, it's haunted here. Like I gotta, you know, like you hear like a noise, and now you're gonna be spooked out. But what I don't like is that these historical places they're drawing attention and like Eastern State, they're doing the, you know, the jump scares and whatever have you. I do think though a lot of these places, I know there's a place in New York. I actually forgot the name, but these places offer at a high price. Overnight ghost investigations.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure the Whaley House, being the most haunted house, probably has that accommodation. Like, if you pay X amount of money for X amount of people, we'll let you in overnight. And I think they do that at a lot of locations. They do it at the Conjuring House.
Mm.
They do it at...
thank you.
Yeah, they do it at a lot of places. I looked into the Conjuring House. It was like $800 for like 7 hours.
That's your buddy down there.
For a group of four people. Gettysburg does overnight stays in the Farnsworth House, which is like one of the most haunted houses in Gettysburg. Mm. I've looked into that. So they do that. And I'm almost positive in San Diego, especially the Whaley House, that they'll let people come in for X amount of dollars to do the investigation. It's a good way to profit.
Well, and I will say, I think the other cool thing about the Whaley House is I feel like a lot of the times you go to these places and it is... it's dark and it's dreary, like it's a prison, it's an asylum, it's all these heavy, dark, or it's a grave site. And the Whaley House, like I cannot express to you how light it is. These windows are gigantic and the doors are all open and there's windows everywhere and it is just so light. So when you're walking in, they're not trying to set you up for it being dark and macabre and mysterious, that you're walking in and it's like, this is a general store. And here's a case full of cigarettes if you want one.
So I had to bring Joey on because he's been in the back. I'm sure you've been listening in. I know you got work that you're doing at the same time as being here today. So thank you for bringing Ashley. She's awesome. She's got powers. We're bringing on, we've literally each week been bringing on.
Justice League.
Yeah, I know. We're slowly but surely assembling the X-Men in this studio.
I'll take it.
So now you're the skeptic and we got a little bit of time left. I want to get your take on her possible ability and the Whaley House being the most haunted place in the United States, they say.
Well, I think it's possible. I know we talked to Joanne. I don't like to discredit anything. I like to stay reserved. But, like, it is... So we talked about deja vu. We talked about DMT and all those things and, like, the evolution of the human mind. And I think that it's possible that we could be tapping into different dimensions, and that's what these, like, different... The evolution, so to speak, of the brain, right? Like... Are we tapping into a spiritual realm? Does that realm exist? Is it a different dimension? Or are we talking about like we talked in the past, like are we peering into different times? Are we getting glimpses of a timeline that still exists somewhere in a multiverse, right? Like everything that's already happened is simultaneously happening somewhere else, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? And it's very possible that the human mind is and consciousness is so strong that our consciousness is streaming throughout all these different timelines simultaneously, and we get glimpses of these very specific areas of terrible things that happened because they're connected with so much power, and our minds can somehow get in tune with that. And some people may have such a strong powered will and mind that they can actually get into tune. That's my personal belief on what these spirits are. I don't know if they're actual spirits or if we're actually getting a glimpse into this horrible timeline from somewhere else because we're in tune that way, right?
So I had, I don't know if you listened to this one yet, but I had Ralph Sarchi on recently.
Oh, I was listening to that one on the train this morning.
And he's the actual guy that the movie Deliver Us From Evil was transpired about.
Right.
The real Ralph Sarchi. And he said something that one of my friends has been warning me about. That he says that 90% of the places you go to are not ghosts. He says there are ghosts of humans that roam still for whatever reason. But he said that other, that's 10% of it. The other 90% are demons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you think that there are, that place has so much negativity that happened there that like demons are like, this is a Toys R Us for us to roam because people are going to be looking for activity here and it makes them susceptible to opening themselves up to something not good?
I don't know. It's so hard because I will say, like, possession, like, especially when we're talking about, like, horror films, anything possession-based for me is, like, really what will just scare the shit out of me. Like, that is truly very scary to me. And I think that's because it is the idea of something that you cannot see or hold on to or fight, right? Like, you see, like, a person. And I might be itty bitty, but I could take you or I could try. Whereas if it's something demonic, it's something not of this world, that is so, my brain can't even process that. But then on the other side of it, I think there is also this level of, as kind of what Joey was saying, is like the human brain, right? And sort of the cracks that we can experience as people and trauma and what that does to the human psyche. And because I personally haven't ever, knock on wood, that I don't experience something to that extent, that I don't know. And I still feel that even when I talk about feeling energy, I have not seen an apparition. I've not seen a disembodied arm or a head. I have not seen anything that I think to myself, oh, that was kind of spooky. I just have more or less felt things that, again, could be something that I'm always trying to play, you know, the devil's advocate for myself and not trying to get sort of wrapped up in it. So I don't know. It's hard because I do know that especially people who, I think it's more specifically in terms of like the Catholic belief that there are no ghosts, that it is demonic, that if something is claiming to be your grandparent or a friend, that it is essentially a demon putting on a face in order to gain access to you, right? But specifically there, nothing felt like it was trying to lure. It didn't feel like it was trying to manipulate or control. It just kind of felt like almost like I was imposing.
Right.
And it felt like I was walking in on something and shouldn't be in the room.
So we're going to ask someone else their opinion today. So what people don't know is usually we record with three people, right? Today there is five people here today.
Plus and three kittens.
And three kittens in the studio that we have to keep here until they get a home.
And guests outside too.
Oh, and the guests at the window. Mama Cat looking through the window. So we actually have Joey's wife here today. Another Ashley. So
Ashley Squared.
We are going to ask her opinion on what she thinks about all this, the Whaley House and all this stuff. Because her husband comes every Monday to record and talk about the weirdest shit possible. And now we're going to get his wife's own opinion on the paranormal here. Ash, welcome.
Hello. I'm unprepared.
Ashley, you have mixed notes. Now you got that.
That's
Ash.
The best.
We're unprepared. We're going to have a new podcast called Ask Ashley's.
On the spot is the best way to do it. You're unprepared. You have to just answer these questions.
So I've had a lot of wine.
And over a couple glasses
of beer. Listen, we should start drinking to do this podcast every week.
I honestly think
we should.
It would make it a lot more interesting.
Nick's notes would come out a lot better. Joey might start saying he's seeing something, but What is your opinion on this subject? And when Joey told you this is what I'm doing on Mondays, like what do you say? Like I just that you're here tonight with your friend and Joey here. Take it away.
All right. Well, I guess personally, I've never had any truly paranormal experiences at all. So I'm on the fence. I'm more like, I kind of believe, and he's looking, he's giving me a look right now. And he's definitely a skeptic. But I would like to believe very much, you know, that there is more than what we can see. And I've always believed in the other side or our loved ones being able to come visit us or contact us in different ways or check in on us. I don't know what that exactly means or what that looks like because like I said, I've never personally experienced anything. But I'd like to believe that there is more than what we can see and feel here in this realm or whatever you would call it. Now
I've been watching a lot of Loki, so yeah, the realm is the
word. Okay, a good word to use. Good. The skeptic approves.
All right. So I don't want to cut you off, Ashley. No, so let me jump in. I'm gonna defend Joey a little bit here. Okay. So I got you, man. You know, you talk about the multiverse, right? And we talk about and if you go and read my little blurb on the website, I talk about like trying to find the kernel of truth, right? You talked about Ashley, you talked about all that stuff that they brought out, mm-hmm. right? The hair, the death wreaths, the coins, and then Joey, we talk about the multiverse and experiencing all these timelines all at once. And here's where I'm going to tie it in, so bear with me, Harry Potter nerd. Port keys, right? Port keys are a thing, right? In Harry Potter, that they transport you from one location to another. So now we're talking about all these items that are coming from, allegedly, these people. So maybe all these connections, and I'm not saying that, you know, because I have skeptic in me and I have reality in me and I have believer in me, but like all these items could be connecting us to these other versions of these people that are going on in different timelines, different dimensions. And that's where we're getting that, or skeptic side, this is them just trying to play it up, especially under new ownership. We want to make more money, but we could be connecting like a portkey to these other dimensions and touching these other realities and the other's timelines. And that's where we're getting these feelings from.
Right. No, I definitely feel like that's the more scientific, logical solution, that it may be if you can figure out if there are different timelines, if you can figure out that there's a multiverse through mathematics, then that's the more provable thing than like there's just a spiritual realm somewhere, right? Because, right. I mean, they are trying to prove string theory. There are scientists that, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, Billy's favorite guy. So
we're going to do a podcast together.
There are string theorists that are trying to prove that if they already haven't proved that the multiverse, we could probably like look that up, that it may even exist. So, but there may be something like, I don't know if you know about singularity. Has anybody ever heard of singularity? So singularity is that there's like, we're all essentially one consciousness experiencing the world in multiple different vessels, like different bodies. And if singularity already does exist, it's very possible that when consciousness does something horrible to itself, like if like one person murders another person, they're actually murdering themselves, so to speak, right? It may create this crack in the fabric of the space-time continuum that can be revisited or sensed in a room and presence of what that consciousness did to itself, right? So something bad happens in a specific space. Everybody else is picking up on that energy because there's a crack in the fabric of time because of what consciousness did to itself that was so horrible in that specific instance.
We're getting deep.
That's just a theory. I'm going deep. I'm going deep.
I've had too much wine for that theory.
I've had too much wine. I'm like, what did you just say? Can you repeat that?
That's pretty good. No, that's good stuff. That's almost like Dario kind of stuff. You know, Dario talks about some wild stuff. We had some great conversations with Dario.
To answer your question, Billy, I think I'm a believer with a healthy dose of skepticism.
You don't have to say believer because you're here. You could say
No, truly, though. I think I am.
She has sleep paralysis, so she has the devil's.
Yeah, okay, so I guess if you could consider... So I have experienced sleep paralysis. I haven't experienced anything consciously. You know what I mean?
Ashley's been on before in another episode. It's just it was through Joey clipping some stuff. Yeah, it was an interview that we pieced on an episode. But you said you did experience sleep paralysis, and your father too, right?
He talked about it once or twice in his life. I think he is definitely more on the side of skepticism.
Yeah,
for sure. I think for me, I'm not sure what it is. I think I can look at it from a scientific perspective. Of course, they've done studies on sleep paralysis and things like that. And
Joey just gave us a Nobel Peace Prize, like.
Breakdown
on the power.
Of the power. I gave you guys a brain buster. Go think about that one for 7 hours on the toilet.
I tell you right now, Joey is so ready for Halloween to be over so that we can go back to conspiracies and ancient civilizations.
Aliens,
and
conspiracies.
And aliens and the Bigfoot sighting in Colorado.
Ancient Egypt.
I mean, he is so ready for Halloween to be over. He's just like, I can't take this no more. Talking about people's wreaths made of hairs made of wreath and hangings of 6'4" people. He's like, what is this shit? But at the end of the day, there's even the skeptics, right? Yeah. I had someone that commented on my page today, and he posted that he watched the Deliver Us from Evil movie. And I said, hey, I just did an episode. Why don't you check out the episode? And they listened, and he was like, I'm a Catholic, but I don't really believe in demonic possession. I was like, what? That's kind of in the Bible. But he basically said, I'm a skeptic. But then he wrote a story that when his mom passed away, something to that extent, that he went to the room where she used to stay. And mind you, now he's saying he's a skeptic, but kind of like weirdly. And he said he went to the room where his mom used to stay in. And he like sat in the chair and he felt someone whispering. Like paraphrasing the story here, but he felt someone whispering in his ear. And he said, writing this on Facebook, he's like, that was her probably telling me that, you know, I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm okay. Mind you, he just told me 5 minutes before writing that on the threads that he was a skeptic. So I replied back to something that I say on this podcast all the time. Even the skeptics have a story that they can't explain. There's some weird story that they can't explain. And in my years of doing this, my studies, you can't explain something.
Yeah.
It's something that's paranormal.
Well, and I grew up with my grandma. So like I said, personally haven't experienced anything, but there are people all around me who talk about it all the time. And my grandma was, I mean, she was, I don't know if she was sensitive or really was some sort of a medium or something like that. But she said the only people really that understood her in her life was her father and her grandmother, who also experienced things. And for many years when she was very young, she was abused by her mother, who got angry at her basically anytime she mentioned anything that she ever experienced. So in her older age, I lived with her for several years and would watch her and I would sit there and think, is she insane or is she really hearing these things? Like, I don't know because I'm not experiencing it, but I'm watching her. You know, sometimes she would just look up at the door and ask me if I heard knocking on the door, or I would hear her in her bedroom and she would be like, leave me alone, go away, you're not welcome here, stop. You know, and then I'd be like, Grandma, are you okay? You know, from the living room, I don't know what's happening. But she would always talk about it. And even when she was very close to passing away, she had cancer. She went very quickly, 6 months probably. She was always fascinated with the other side and you know, ghosts and spirits and demons. And she watched Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters and all the shows. She was, I mean, it was our favorite pastime together. But getting close to death, which I was surprised by, she was very, very scared of what was going to come next. And it was ironic. Like, she spent her entire life obsessed with the other side. And then we come close to death and she's like, I don't want to go. I don't want to know what's on the other side.
It's scary.
Yeah.
And
I'm seeing whatever it is that she saw, which we only know probably only the half of it or whatever she chose to share with us, really talking about seeing people in her home, ghosts, you know, soldiers that look like they were not from this time walking through her kitchen, and I don't know what, but who knows what else she experienced or claimed to have, you know, seen on the other side. And a lot of that kind of brought me to that believer side and kind of wondering what is there and what is, could it be, you know, is there, I mean, we don't know. There are things that we will never know. We won't understand until we ourselves go.
So. Yeah, that subject is scary. I think about it a lot.
Life's biggest adventure.
Yeah, I think about that subject. Life's
mystery.
I think about that subject a little bit more than I probably should, mm-hmm. just at night, especially at night. Like, you know, like, I've had a lot of people that passed away, and having Joanne on recently and just makes you think, like, you know, what happens, you know, like, yeah. What do you feel? What is your last, you know, a lot of crazy things. Like my grandfather before passing away, he was saying to my mom, who's the guy in the room? And my grandfather was bedridden before he passed away. He literally didn't leave this bed. And he kept saying that someone in a dark suit is sitting in the room with him. And my mom would tell him, no one's in the room. And he's like, I see someone sitting there, just staring at me, waiting. He's waiting. Who is he waiting for? Is he waiting for me? And, you know, there's people that report seeing things before they pass away. And obviously, the story gets shared by their loved ones who say, yeah, no, grandma's grandfather saw something before he passed. And he mentioned it. And my grandfather had that story. You know, he told my mom. And my mom told the story, and, you know, who knows? Death is definitely a very scary subject. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things we cover on the podcast is just a possibility to what actually happens. But before I formally thank everybody and the three kittens, which I only see one of them for, like, the last 10 minutes. Oh, they're sleeping? Okay. Before I thank both Ashleys and Joey and Nick, I'd like to thank Spotify for Podcasters for making this very big episode possible, talking about the Whaley House, to death, to having both Ashleys on, one of which is an X-Men. We have the dank Spotify for Podcasters. And if you haven't heard about Spotify for Podcasters, it is the free app that allows you to get your possible podcast idea
out there
on platforms like Google, Apple Podcasts, and many other platforms. So if you have a podcasting idea and you need a way to get it out there, download Spotify for Podcasters. Ashley, thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. I'm an X-Men who, you know, I'm excited.
Ashley, Joey, thank you for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Joey, thanks for coming. Nick?
I'm always here, Bill.
Did you like that Nick's Notes segment brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters?
I actually love it. I'm going to get some music.
Theme music?
Some theme music in there, right?
Theme song.
We're going to incorporate it in. And until next time, this has been another episode of the Say What Again, Billy podcast.